This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Well, it must be getting real close to the beginning of baseball season here because Jeff Passan is back for our regular Tuesday conversation. Every Tuesday at 8:30, we sit down with Jeff and get ourselves excited about the season. He's not there yet, though. We're
wonder
still
how his back is. Yeah. His back, you know, I mean, after breaking that thing like Tyson, spinal, I wonder if that back, if he's feeling it, if he's healed, if he's ready to go, ready to carry this show again, Saul, because he does every Tuesday at 8:30.
I wonder if he's had anything to think about, talk about, write about here with the start of a baseball season, the absolute insanity around the Shohei Ohtani story. And oh, by the way, what's going on in the baseball union is an entire issue unto itself. I mean, you could spend quite some time. We probably won't spend a lot, but there is a reckoning going on in the union as well. So lots going on in the world of baseball. Jeff Passan joins us now. Jeff, good morning. How are you?
I am great, gentlemen. How are you?
We're also great. Baseball is, there's all sorts of good stuff in baseball. I want to make sure we have time for all of it. So let's jump right in. 2 days away from opening day. What's your outlook on the Mariners this year?
I am very bullish on the Mariners in 2024. And I'll be honest, I flirted with picking them to go to the World Series this year. Wow. I didn't do it, but I don't think that it is unrealistic to believe that they have the talent and the ability to win a championship with this team. There are still flaws on this roster, but there are flaws on every roster. And when you have the kind of pitching that they do, particularly the kind of starting pitching that they do, it can take you a really long way. And I understand that up until this point, it hasn't, but they also haven't had a full year with the five guys that they've got. And well, Brian Woo's starting the season on the injured list. I think the expectation is that he's going to be back and should make a, you know, pretty reasonable number of starts. And that's what this is all going to come down to, guys. If the starting pitching stays healthy, the way that it has in recent seasons, I think that the Mariners are going to be in a fantastic position, despite being in an absolute meat grinder of a division in the American League West.
Well, this is weird, Brock. I thought we were going to talk to Passan every week, but apparently it's going to be John Morosi. I'm just very surprised. The level of optimism is shocking to me. I thought we were getting Jeff Passan, and instead, Moore, did you call the wrong number? Did you call Morosi instead? What's happened here?
He sounds like Passan.
I know, but the words are very Morosi-like.
I know. It's amazing. I have hair, too. Somehow, like this, you know?
So if we were to rewind,
John's my boy, I'm sorry. You know what? He speaks a lot more languages than I do, so
sure
he's got that going for him.
If we were to rewind the clock back to this exact time last year, a couple days before the opener, when we had you on for the first time, were you as bullish in 23 as you seem to be in 24?
No, and I think that's in large part because, not just of the moves they made this winter, which remember, like early on in the winter, it was a nightmare for Mariners fans. You know, Jared Kelnick had been traded in essentially a salary dump. Gino Suarez had been traded essentially in a salary dump. And still, when you look at the Mariners payroll for this upcoming season, it is not where it should be. Like it's very simple. They are in a special window right now, and this is when you add, and I still don't think that they've added to the extent that they could have or should have, but this is the reality that they're dealing with right now. And when you objectively look at this roster and who they have, I think that Julio Rodriguez has as good of a chance as anyone to win the MVP award in the American League this year. I think that Cal Raleigh is really going to cement himself as one of the best catchers in the big leagues. I think that J.P. Crawford has the ability to turn around and be a five-win player again like he was last year. And bringing in Jorge Polanco and adding a bat like Mitch Garver and You know, Mitch Haniger 2.0 in Seattle, like, you know, we've got things that to me make this a better team than it was last season.
Let's focus on Julio for a moment. Year three for Julio. By the way, I totally agree with your take that he seems to be poised for an MVP kind of a season.
Can I just interrupt? I'm working on a Julio story right now that's going to be so cool, and I'm so excited for it.
Give us a hint? Anything?
No, I don't want to do that. I want it to be a surprise because I want Mariners. It's a good story.
Cool.
Yeah, this is not going to be about $4.5 million being stolen from his bank account.
Good. That's good to hear. Yeah,
good. He just has everything put together so well for somebody who's 23 years old. Like, he just gets it. And I think there comes that point in every player's career where their mental game matches up to their physical game. And that's when we see the absolute apex of what they can be. And I think this is the year that happens for Julio Rodriguez, which is kind of frightening considering how good he's been in his first two seasons already, Mike.
Is year three sort of a typical season for a player to put everything together?
I don't have anything objective to back that up. In my head, and you know, having covered this game 20 plus years, that sounds right. It's almost like you've shaken off the doldrums of a rookie season, and you've gotten through that sophomore year that can be so difficult for some guys. And you're almost a veteran by that third year. And it's silly to say that about someone who's 23 years old, that they're a veteran at this point, but you understand not just the rigors of the game and what it takes to succeed, but you're starting to mature and understand your place in it as well, and your place inside of a clubhouse that increasingly is going to be turning toward you to be a leader and to be a central figure. You know, you're not the young guy anymore. You're not green in that third year. Like, you are established at that point. And I suppose the contract that the Mariners gave Julio Rodriguez cemented him in that place. But it's more about, I think, accepting and acknowledging that place, rather than it being foisted on you because of a dollar figure, because of the number of years you're going to be around.
Okay, Jeffrey, give me realistic expectations for Julio in 24. Give me unrealistic expectations.
Oh, man. Realistic expectations. I don't think it is. I'm going to look at rate stats, right? I think that he's going to hit somewhere in the 280, 290 range. I think he's going to get on base at least 35% of the time. And I think he's going to slug, 525 minimum. I think the power is going to really pick up this year. And unrealistic, 45, 45. Like, I could see him hitting 45 home runs this year. I could see him stealing 45 bases this year. That is at the edge, you know, that's 95th percentile projection right there. Mm-hmm. But I do not discount anything with him. And it goes back to that combination of physical with the growth of mental. I think he's finally beginning to understand who he is and where he fits into this, not just place in Seattle and anchor of the Mariners franchise, but in the entirety of Major League Baseball. Like, he's one of the guys now. He's one of the guys who everyone in the sport is going to look at and say, I wish I were him. And I think instead of cowering from it or shying away, he embraces it and runs with it.
A couple more on the Mariners, and then I definitely want to make sure we have some time to ask you about the biggest national story here in baseball. But, you know, kind of talking through the need for their pitching to stay healthy. I agree with you. If they're healthy, they're an unbelievable pitching staff. But already we're seeing, you know, Brian Wu go to the injured list, and we'll see how long this takes. Hopefully it's just, you know, the 10 or 12 days they're talking about. But you kind of look through it, and in the last few years, Jeff, all the guys they've either graduated or traded – Kirby, Miller, Wu, Gilbert, Brash, plus trading Williamson and Levi Stout. I mean, that's like seven or eight guys that they've all brought up through their system. And now there's not like a tremendous amount of depth left in the high minors. What do you do if...
I don't know, man. If you can fill in with Emerson Hancock in that
he's the one.
Spot, you're doing okay.
He's the one.
And if you can pop a guy like Logan Evans... toward, and for those unfamiliar with Logan Evans, he was an average college starter who I believe the Mariners took in the seventh round last year. He was a later round draft pick, and I got a text from somebody from a scout this spring who said, "Do you know who Logan Evans is?" And I said, "No, should I?" And he said, "Yes, absolutely. He's on the backfields with the Mariners, like sitting 99." And that's why I'm as bullish on the Mariners guys as I am. It's not just the talent that they've got in the big leagues right now. It's a sustained ability to draft, find internationally, and develop guys. And the things that I've heard this spring about Johnny Farmello and Colt Emerson, two of their three first round picks last year. These are guys who could both be top 25 prospects by the time the year is over.
Yeah. So you don't think they need to go out and acquire another pitcher?
No. Do you?
Not necessarily. Not like a big name pitcher, but, you know, those sort of 4A types of guys that just sort of help you get through a season.
But that's not going to cost anything. Like that's not a difficult guy to find. And, you know, if they can scratch together a little coin, Mike Clevenger's still out there as well. Like,
oh, no.
There are options.
I refuse to watch Mike Clevenger pitch for any amount of time. I'm out. That's a non-starter.
That's okay. Fine. Whatever. My point is there are guys who are available and they will not cost a whole lot to get. And so if, you know, I think if there's another injury, maybe that's something you consider. And it's normally I wouldn't suggest that for a team. But when you're in a division with the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers, every win's going to count. And I do think all three of them are playoff teams this year. But it is going to be health dependent all the way around. And the Astros rotation is, you know, about as banged up as any out there these days. You know, Justin Verlander is going to start the year on the injured list. Luis Garcia is going to be out for half the season. Lance McCullers out for half the season. Jose Urquidy has an elbow problem. Like, there's a lot of issues right now with the Astros, and that's something that it's why I think a good start. It's not a necessity, but it would be a really nice luxury for the Mariners to start off hot.
Is Polanco good?
Polanco's really good, yes.
Can you give me some assurance, a Mariners fan, some assurance he's not Colton Wong?
I think Jorge Polanco at his peak was much better than Colton Wong at his peak. And I'm just like, I look at, he's 30 years old. Like, he's still in the prime of his career, late prime at least. And I do not anticipate that Jorge Polanco, when you look at the consistency of his bat, the big question with him has always been, is he going to stay on the field? He had a spectacular season in 2021. And since then, I think he's played 100 games and 80 games in back-to-back seasons. If he is out on the field, he's a genuine 30 home run threat. Probably going to be likelier in the 20s, but it's still the type of bat that plays in a championship lineup. Yeah.
It's pretty good. And sure seems to be a lot of doubles in there as well, as the Mariners have kind of made a switch away from sort of the boomer bust three true outcome guys and seem to be looking for a little bit more contact. We'll see if that works. And something tells me
that's why Patson's so bullish on him.
That's a story we're going to be talking about throughout this season. I got to spend a few minutes on Shohei, though, before we let you go. And what do you think happened yesterday? I mean, he spoke. He certainly went on the offensive. He didn't answer questions. Yeah. What do you make of it?
I think he told the version of the story that we are going to hear from him going forward. And if it wasn't clear already from Tisha Thompson's reporting, then I think it is abundantly clear now. He is painting himself in this case as a victim. And if the facts, as he laid them out, are indeed true, then he was. You know, the way that Shohei Ohtani talked about Ipe Mitsuhara, that he was more than his interpreter. He was a confidant. He was a brother. He was a seminal figure in his life. And then to say, essentially, he betrayed me and stole, Shohei Ohtani didn't use a number. The number that we've printed is $4.5 million. So it's a lot of money, and it's a huge breach of trust. And, I keep hearing from people who are skeptical about the story, and skepticism in this case with the story changing the way that it did is entirely warranted. But the skepticism about how could he have access to money like this? I think it looks past the idea that Ipe Mitsuhara was so much more for Shohei Ohtani than just an interpreter, and that it is not beyond the realm of possibility that he did have access to a bank account that had that kind of money.
What questions do you want the answers to?
I would like to know, to whom did Ohtani's people refer a criminal, not complaint, but criminal activity? So what agency did they reach out to?
Why?
I would like to know, because if, listen.
Because Tisha said, it's funny, Tisha Thompson said the exact same thing when I asked her that on, what was it, Thursday or Friday last week. And I was surprised that was her answer. It was your answer also. Why is that so important?
It's important because I think it goes to the veracity of Ohtani's story. If you are alleging a massive theft, Mike, and then you're not following up with criminal authorities on this massive theft, then, how do we know that the massive theft even happened at that point? What that does is that validates Ohtani's version of the story, because it opens him up to scrutiny when investigators are looking into the details of what actually happened.
That makes sense.
Beyond that, I would love to know the very granular details of what happened between the clubhouse meeting where Ipe Mitsuhara stood up in front of the Dodgers team and talked about how he had a gambling problem and how Shohei was helping him out, and exactly how and when it dawned on Ohtani that, something's a little fishy here. Who did he talk with? How did they discuss it? And how did it get to the point where the Dodgers fired Mitsuhara? And, this is a much larger point, but I would just like to know where all of this fits into this expansive federal investigation into an alleged illegal bookmaker, and where that fits among all of the other players involved. That's the sort of thing that I think is going to take a long, long time to piece together, and it's why this story is just in the beginning. You know, we have Ohtani's version at this point, but getting authorities' version as well, because they have all of the things that we as reporters don't. They have subpoena power. They have the ability to compel witnesses to testify in a case. And they have that under the penalty of perjury. When you have those levers, you are far likelier to get the full truth than anything that reporters can be told. You know, we're talking with as many people as possible and trying to piece together the details and get a greater sense of what actually happened. But, you know, sometimes as reporters, we're told stories and we do our very best to verify them before we put them into print. And that's what we're doing right now and what we're going to continue to do.
Last thing for me, Jeffrey, in 7 days, we'll talk to you again. We will have 5 Mariners games under our belt against the Red Sox and others. What headlines, what stories would we love to hear as Mariner fans over those first 5 games?
That they're 5-0.
Boom. Speak it.
Well, that's very simple.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great.
That's not a storyline. That's just great, like an that's answer.
That's a great way to end a pass. Thank you. Appreciate you.
That's it.
Ask a better question.
All right.
I take no responsibility for my brother over here. He asks fine. What he asks. I got nothing on that. I got one or two more minutes with you though. I don't want to end just yet. And I know this is probably not like the biggest story on a lot of people's radar right now, but I think it's going to end up as one, and that's what's happening with the union. We had Evan Drellick on last week, and he kind of gave us his update on what he thinks is going on. What do you make of this story of what's happening with the union?
It's been fascinating to me. And for those unfamiliar, there was essentially a challenge to Major League Baseball Players Association leadership led by Harry Marino, who was the 33-year-old lawyer who organized and eventually helped unionize minor league players. So this is not like some backbencher making a power play. Like, this is somebody who's been involved in these sorts of things and believed that the union was poorly run and that change needed to be had. And what happened ended up fracturing the union pretty well, which is like music to Major League Baseball's ears, 2.5 years away from a collective bargaining agreement. And the ultimate upshot of this is that Tony Clark, the longtime executive director, is going to remain in his role. There's still questions about Bruce Meyer, the lead negotiator, who Marino had proposed essentially taking his job over. But ultimately, what this does is it forces the MLBPA to get its you-know-what together over the next year plus before these collective bargaining agreement talks begin, because let's not forget, there was a 99-day lockout in 2021, and we were very close to having a season that was in peril. And when you have the frustration with the free agent market that you have among a large number of players from this off season, that's the sort of stuff that tends to embolden a group of players. And the fact that these players' leadership has been weakened at this point only makes the likelihood, I fear, of an even longer work stoppage greater. And I hate to say that. I wish that were not the case, but already there had been rumblings behind the scenes of something that's going to be more extended than last time. Now, we don't know until the talks begin. Like, that's an important thing to note. Like, this is a long way away, and things can happen between now and then that change that. But the frustration of players is palpable at this point, and Major League Baseball has done a really good job in collective bargaining talks over the last 2 decades, really wresting control from the union, and the union wants to grab it back.
It's going to be an interesting story. We'll keep talking about it maybe a little bit almost every week, Jeff. But thank you. We're glad we have you back for another season. I'm sorry that I called you John Morosi earlier. I'm sure that you will find a way to be more pessimistic as time goes on. We count on you for it.
I have no doubt.
Yes. Good.
I'm sorry you couldn't answer my hard question. That's okay. Maybe next time. I know it's our first show of the year. We'll get there. Appreciate you passing.
All right. Jeff?
It's my pleasure, Brock. I appreciate it. Listen, I appreciate the effort. And I know next time I come on that the shame of this moment will cause you to ask better questions.
It'll be better.
I feel like this is a motivating factor, and you know, that's what Coach is here for, buddy.
Hey, did you read Tim Britton's story today?
Goodbye, Jeffrey. We got to go. We're
Did
hard
you
up
read
against
that
a break.
Where he came up with all the former teams that have a pathway to success for current ones?
I did not.
Read it. It's pretty cool. I think you'll find it interesting. And then maybe, you know, you'll do something creative like that. And then we'll be able to talk to you about it instead. There's Jeff Passan. He joins us every Tuesday at 8:30 here on Brock and Salk.